Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Two Black Guys with Good Credit, the show for the financially curious and the financially knowledgeable. It is Black History Month, so all month we are celebrating Black business. And earlier this week, Sean, Karen, we talked about some of our favorite Black businesses, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Remember that expensive laundromat? I love it.
Well, we did, Matt. And guess what? I'm surprising you guys once again. I thought I'd bring on my favorite Black business owners. Or you know what? They're just my favorite business owners in general. Not even just because they're Black. They're just my favorite business owners. So I thought I'd bring them on, surprise you guys, as I always do for these shows. I'm bringing on my longtime friend, Saren Nurse, who owns Kiki's Pet Spa and Boutique in Brooklyn, New York, Fort Greene. And then my good friend, trainer, and I got to say all the right things because he's going to be busting my ass tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., Chris Sansbury from CrossFit Dean Street. Welcome to the show, guys, and thank you for coming on.
So, Karen, do you have any – I think you have a few stats for us on Black-owned businesses. Why don't you share those with us?
If you guys want a little Black history business facts, you guys can refer to our last episode, which had some good little trivia in it. But we have a couple more this time. The number of Black-owned businesses in America has ballooned between 2007 and 2012, which is the last time that the U.S. Census Bureau tallied the nation's Black-owned businesses at 2.6 million businesses, which is an increase between those years of 37%, which is huge. And honestly, I can't answer the question of why that is. Maybe you guys can.
We fed up of working for the man.
You and me both, babe.
We fed up with the man.
Well, I mean, guys, that's a huge jump.
Well, sadly, the backside of that statistic is COVID has done a lot of damage to a lot of the Black small business world. A lot of them are fighting to stay alive. So there's a twofold statistic going on. But so why don't you guys, can you guys tell us a little bit about your businesses? Start with Chris.
Oh, wow. Okay. My name is Chris Sainsbury, and I am community rich. And what I mean by that is that I have the job and the opportunity, and not to sound cliche whatsoever, but my job and my responsibility is to make people healthier, stronger, fitter, and just better movers overall. But what that comes with is a lot of like self-confidence, self-esteem, like just a preparation for life that's very hard to describe. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you're just, my job is about making you better. That's it. And the beautiful thing about my gym is that you're going to meet like-minded people that have the same interests, other professionals. It doesn't matter the industry that you're in. Sometimes I have sanitation workers and brain surgeons working in the same room together. Like, there's every walk of life walk through my door. But the main thing is, the main ingredient, the common denominator, is that everybody just wants to get better. And that's it.
Let me give you a brief example of that and my personal experience with CrossFit. Like, I was always an active guy that worked out consistently. And CrossFit kind of took my Chris's gym took my workouts to a whole different level. Like, when you're going to the gym by yourself, you're kind of doing what you're comfortable doing. And right. Chris's gym pushes you to do things that you're uncomfortable doing, like being 6'4", putting a bar straight over your head and bending down and snatching it is a very tough exercise for tall people, but I was forced to do it. And to make a long story short, I hated running, and because CrossFit makes you uncomfortable, for the first time in my life, I ran like a 10-mile run, you know.
Did you just tell a story about how tall and fit you are?
You know, I am, but, you know. But and that's all to do with CrossFit. I mean, I really saw the change in like my strength, my endurance, and all that. And there's such a camaraderie in there. Yeah, you don't even know what anybody does in there because everybody's just kind of working towards a common goal. And Chris's staff and team are just great motivators. It doesn't matter who's training. He's trained them all consistently as staff, where every trainer is a great trainer and you just get motivated to do your thing. So yeah, it's a great environment of people of all different walks in life.
No, okay. One thing I do want to say that, like, Sean just really capitalized on is that I don't do well as a business if you don't change. So this is not like your big global gym. This is not the 10,000 person gym. This is the 300, 500, 200 person gym where I know, where it sounds like Cheers, right? And like everybody knows your name, and like that's what it is. And at the end of the day, like, I don't do well as a business owner if you don't actually become better. And if you don't, then honestly, I will clip your membership. If you don't show up, I will clip your membership. Like, there's really no point in holding on to dead weight in my business. Yeah. It's a very hard pill to swallow. But I'm not in the business of taking your money and you're not utilizing me.
I mean, people must absolutely love that. You know, that's very like, that's very kind of central bank interest rates kind of thing. Like, you're tightening up the supply and then the demand must just go. If somebody told me I wasn't making enough progress to be at their gym, I would work out so hard. I would double my rate. I would pay so much money just to be accepted at this gym that doesn't want me.
I wouldn't throw that blow that hard. I wouldn't knock you down that hard. But if you really look at the business planning for gyms, they say, hey, you know what? 50% of all of your members will not use you. Well, you know what? Then I don't need that type of ratio. Mm-hmm. Like, if 50% of my business doesn't use me, well, then I'm out of business.
Yeah. Right.
You know, because I already charge at a premium. You know, I already charge at a premium. At the end of the day, I need you to come. I need you to be involved. I need you to, like, get some of the smoke.
Saren, why don't you tell us a little bit about your business?
So while Chris is there getting people all fit and healthy and beautiful, I'm getting their pets all fit and healthy and beautiful. So my business, Kiki's Pet Spa Boutique, I do pet care services. So I do doggy daycare, I do overnight boarding, I do pet grooming, I do training. So I pretty much, you know, have any service that you can think of for a dog or a cat. So that's a parallel between my business and Chris's business. I'm here to get the pets looking all great and fit and healthy. I don't reject them if they're not. I do reject them if they start making problems and troubles like Sean's dog has done.
Sean, what is up with your dog?
Yeah, what's up with him?
I got a crazy dog, man. I got a crazy dog. And let me just
what
give you a story.
What has he done to friend of the show, Saren?
Let me just tell you what I had to do before I came on this show. I have an iRobot, and I didn't realize. I went away, and I guess my dog just felt like, I'm going to just poop in the kitchen, and my iRobot is set to 4 o'clock. So I was cleaning with a toothpick, my iRobot out with dog poop.
Right? Oh, my gosh.
Excellent.
That's my dog, Champ. A mind of his own. Doesn't care, and yeah, he's a challenge.
Well, on that note, so Saren, how long have you been in business? How long has Kiki's been in business, Saren?
So it's been, gosh, close to 20 years.
Wow.
I know you can't. I know I look like 21, right? But yeah, it's been close to 20 years, and I've opened up a total, I think it's of 6 stores in the course of 20 years. So I have opened, closed, sold, consolidated. So I'm actually down to one store, which is my original store, which is in Fort Greene. That's been around for the longest. Mm-hmm. I opened up in 2003. And, you know, I mean, you guys have been in Fort Greene. I think Matt and Sean, you guys have lived there. So you've seen the neighborhood change. And so my business has really changed over those close to two decades in terms of the services I offered. I started off doing pet supplies, and that changed where I didn't do any pet supplies any longer. The majority of my business is doggy daycare and boarding. So, yeah. Well, so that's about my business.
So Fort Greene is kind of gentrified now, right?
Kind of.
So it's more than a little bit gentrified because people who look exactly like me moved in and opened a Starbucks. So you're in a pretty gentrified spot. And what are some of the challenges of that specifically? Or like, what are the challenges of being there as it was gentrifying?
So gentrification is, it's a process, right? So gentrification has, you know, Fort Greene started in the early 2000s, where you had black on black gentrification. You had wealthier blacks come into the neighborhood. Then after that, you had more of the artsy types of white people. And then that changed also, and they were displaced. And then you had higher income white people. So over those three processes, my business changed also. So initially when, you know, I had more of a black clientele, then it changed and I had more of a white clientele, but then they were also, they didn't have as high of an income. So initially I was really price conscious in terms of what I was offering. That changed. And now that we have more higher income white people, my biggest category of business is doggy daycare, because they have the means to afford doggy daycare and they want doggy daycare. Mm-hmm. So that's how, like, you know, that's how my business model has changed.
So you're constantly also re-engineering yourself to keep up with what's happening and changing in your community. You're aware, yes, you have to be aware of what's happening.
It's adaptation. And that's right. The only way I think a business can survive in a gentrified neighborhood is to really adapt their business model. Mm-hmm. Because your customer base is changing. And then also your expenses are going up because, you know, you have more competition for space. Mm-hmm. So rents are increasing. So you have to figure out, how am I going to afford this increased rent? So you're constantly adapting.
What about you, Chris?
I think for me, the idea of opening a gym started pretty much once they started talking about renovating them. That's mm-hmm. when it actually started happening a little shortly before or after 9/11, that's when the ideas of opening a gym started for me. I started doing my research and I was in Manhattan and back and forth between Manhattan and Brooklyn a lot. And I remember I was ready to pull the trigger. I was going to open a boutique studio in Manhattan. I was in Tribeca, and this guy comes to me and he's an older gentleman that owns a gym in Manhattan still. He says, at this point, you could probably earn the same dollar around the corner from where you live. Why come to Manhattan and battle with the rat race? Stay in Brooklyn, be in Brooklyn, be one of the first to actually be a part of the wave of change. And with all honesty, that's exactly what I did. Mm-hmm. New York is a service-providing city. So, like, my job is to provide the service for anybody, old or new. And that's where I am with that.
Mm-hmm. Were you nervous, like, about serving beyond your community? Because I know in our community, it's like, it can be challenging. It's not necessarily the norm. Is that something that you thought about, or you just kind of went in and did it?
I put up as a neighborhood was gentrifying. So there were, you know, there were black customers and there were white customers. And the thing is that what I was finding is that, you know, my white customers were probably more into actually grooming their dogs a little bit more frequently. So I kind of had to have a diverse clientele. And so that's the way it's always been. And, you know, I've had, even if I look at it how it is now, so my grooming business is primarily black. So people come from as far away as Delaware to get their dogs groomed as my
come store. From Delaware? Wow, wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, because remember, you know, I was, you know, you're also in a gentrified neighborhood where blacks were displaced. So once someone is like a hairstylist, once you establish a relationship with your dog groomer, it's, right. You know, usually you'll come back and the dog has to be groomed every 2 or 3 months. So, you know, you come back into New York City, you know, you bring your dog to the groomer. So my grooming business, the majority of, you know, of, majority of it is actually is Black. Now, when I look at my doggy daycare business, the majority of it is white. And then, you know, there are a couple of reasons there, you know, it's maybe, you know, that in terms of the price points that maybe the white people who are actually in the neighborhood are more likely to use that service because doggy daycare tends to be more of a local business. And the fact that now the majority of my residents and my neighbors are white, that tends to be where, you know, my clientele comes is local. So there's actually a difference in terms of like my services and who, you know, who my customers are.
I have a question for Chris, like actually for both of you, but I'd like to start with Chris. With under the challenges we've had with COVID and how that's been affecting businesses. I know for gyms and indoor businesses, there's different regulations, laws, challenges. How have you dealt with the pandemic? How has that changed? Or how have you had to shift? How has that impacted you at all, or if at all?
Oh, no, it definitely impacted. You know, it was extremely scary for a little while because we didn't know, we didn't have a really full understanding of what was going on with COVID. We didn't understand exactly how to contract it. We didn't know if going outside and taking out the garbage was the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. So it was totally scary. Over time, and especially when it became summertime, you start to see what resembled New York City slightly. Mm-hmm. People started to become the understanding, the information. People were listening to Dr. Fauci. We were watching, you know, all the powers be, you know, speak about it. And people slowly started to become more comfortable. But when they allowed gyms to open, we were able to do the things that gyms should have been doing from very long ago. There's a spray bottle with the right solutions. Here's your personalized cleaning rag. Please please wipe down your stations. How many times do you remember going to a gym and somebody left a puddle of sweat on the floor?
Mm-hmm.
No. Things like that are not happening now. Like no. You please clean up after yourself now. And you'll notice that people are. It's like literally talking to a 5-year-old. Like, no, you over there, clean it up. You know. So so I love it. I love it for that aspect. But the hard part is that, you know, gyms thrive on population. Mm-hmm. So I heard my business partner say the other day, like, you know, back in the day, showing a packed gym was cool. Not so much more. Not too much more. Showing a packed gym is kind of scary. So yeah. Then what do? Do you raise your prices? Then you kind of price yourself out, right? No, we can't do that. We just got to, like, honestly, we just got to ride the wave and hopefully hopefully let the government earn our trust and allow trust our community. And but what, hands down, and I said this a couple minutes ago at the beginning of my introduction, that I'm community rich. And with all honesty, we went through 7 months with no gym. Like, there were times that we opened up a parking lot and we were training in the middle of the rain. And mind you, keep in mind for people that are listening in, we were allowed, the CDC allowed us to actually go outside and work out in the parks and work out in open spaces, but we couldn't do anything enclosed and indoors. So we were like on a sidewalk with the barbells and the kettlebells and everything else. And so there were days that it was pouring rain and we were out there teaching the full class. And so I would say, again, community rich, I would be out of business if my community stopped paying their membership. And every person literally hung in there with us and literally paid their membership for the 7 months of no physical indoor space.
That's great. That's impressive.
What I think saying about you too, Chris, that people I want to let people hear is that you actually reduced your membership fees for members, you know. And I know amongst us as clients, we were just so shocked and happy that you were able to do that. And not just a little bit, significantly, like less than half of what you would normally charge. And you did a good job as far as like,
we
you know, feel like part of the family. feeling part of the family. Like throughout, we were doing online classes, you were doing outdoor stuff. So it's like we never left. We were just waiting for you to gear back up. And I think that type of customer service, like you said, community rich, pays off. Like putting you invested in your clients by giving them discounts, acknowledging their needs, and keeping in touch with them to know that, you know, I'm there for you. And I think that's why I think the gym is thriving even better. Like you said, it's a cleaner gym. I think there's more people coming there now than there was before COVID, to be quite frank. It feels that way, you know, and the classes are really intense now. So I think you are able to really, I don't want to say take advantage of COVID, but understand how you need to adjust your business model, how you need to get more customer service friendly to make everybody commit to your brand and what you do. So kudos to you.
Thank you, brother.
Karen, you want
to? Yeah. So, I mean, it's awesome that the community's been like an asset to you and you an asset to the community. But what about institutions? Like, how have your interactions with banks been? And do you feel like you've had any different treatment because of your race?
Saren?
Sure. So I think I've actually had pretty good experiences with banks, interestingly. So I've actually been able to, since I've been in business, I've actually gotten 2 SBA loans, which is quite unusual, I think, as a Black woman, when you look at, you know, at the studies. But I think also, I would say, you know, the key for me was, again, you know, I was in a gentrified neighborhood. So I say the theory of proximity to whiteness, in that the fact that I was actually in neighborhoods that had specialized business bankers. So I was able to develop a relationship with my business bankers, and they encouraged me to apply for business loans. So I actually never had an issue actually getting a loan. So which is, I think, is a little bit unusual. So I can never say, and even like, you know, when for PPP last year, you know, when people were, you know, were talking about, you know, having issues with it, I was able to get a PPP loan in the first round of funding within a matter of like 3 days. And again, because my business banker reached out to me and she was like, you know, PPP is opening up now, go ahead and apply. So I think I've been a little bit unusual in the sense that I've been able to, I have not had an issue with banks at all.
Mm-hmm. So you think that being in the neighborhood is what helped you? Do you think you were in one of those desert bank in neighborhoods, like in Brooklyn, like let's just say Brownsville, East New York, you think your experience would have been different?
Oh, definitely. You know, definitely. It's like I said, you know, my theory is it's the proximity to whiteness that really helped me in terms of getting, you know, funding from banks.
A follow-up on the banking question, in terms of how both of you guys started your business, how did you guys, in terms of getting capital or fund, did you self-start it with your own money? Did you have people invest? Did you get loans? How did you start your businesses?
I started my first, I received, it was my own personal money, and I probably had maybe a couple of investors. But these were, again, people that I've trained and have known me and I've shared my vision with over years. And then one day they just became my angel in disguise. And yeah, I'm really upset about the people. Like, I didn't want to be first with the loan conversation because I was denied on everything. So like just about, I think for the lockdown, when the rollout started, I think we got all of $5,000.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, but regardless of that, like, everything has been out of pocket, pretty much out of pocket for me.
And what about like
starting my business?
What about partnerships? I know, like, even myself, you guys, you kind of have your friends, you're in and out of partners. Like, what advice do you give, and how is that navigating, like, through this whole, like, you know, business relationship, partnership relationships, vendor relationships? How's relationships? What would you say to young people starting out as far as partnership and relationships and trying to build a business?
So I think relationships are extremely important. And so, you know, back to the whole thing with funding, I self-funded my first store. And I also had some family support. But after that, I had investors, and they generally were from my network. And so I think that really is important. And even beyond that, I've done a couple of partnerships with people. I've had, when I did pet supplies retailing, I actually leased a portion of my store to people who actually were doing that particular business. I've also had a veterinarian who rented space for me. I've had trainers who rented space for me. So a lot of what I've done is actually has been partnerships. Mm-hmm. And I actually also ended up doing a store in Prospect Heights, interesting, Chris, on Washington Avenue with someone else in a partnership, but that actually didn't work out. So for me, I think the actual business partnership can actually be a little bit, can be a little difficult and challenging. But in terms of having partnership in terms of subleasing, and stuff like that, I think that definitely has worked. And I think that has actually been a major part of my business model. Mm-hmm. Being able to actually sublease the space, having someone else come in and not having to worry about, have control in that particular part of the business, mm-hmm. but having them bring in their clients and supplying me with, a sublease fee or a rental.
Got you.
Right. So have you guys heard the Elon Musk quote, who said, what words of encouragement would you give an entrepreneur? And he said, if you need words of encouragement, don't become an entrepreneur. Do you think that's true? Or did you have someone kind of cheerleading you along the way? Did you need it? Do you wish you had it? Or are you totally good on your own?
I'm going to jump in on this one. I would say that I think his statement is full of it. There have been.
Oh, wow.
Wow. You're so different, Mr. Trainer.
Why is he full of it?
Huh? I think it's full of it because, I really feel like we're all emotional beings, right? And so there's a book out there that talks about entrepreneurship, but there's no book that tells you about the emotional vibes and the responsibility of actually having a staff and not knowing how you're going to pay Peter or Paul and knowing it, I'm so sorry, the highs and lows of business, unless you have a massive cushion to fall under, you're going to pull from every source of inspiration that you possibly can to keep moving forward. I said my quote immediately. What advice can you have to someone going into business? Any young person, old person, doesn't matter. Keep your eye on the ball, because the minute you take your eye off the ball, things start to go all over the place. You lost your control. You don't know where your advantage points are. You don't know where you can leverage situations. But regardless, you need people to support you along.
But do you think
process.
Everybody's built to be an entrepreneur? Not everybody's
and
built.
And my God, no, not at all. I think it takes a special person to want to be able. I think it takes a special person to walk on both sides of the track.
Mm-hmm. That kind of blanket statement that Musk made, though, to me, it's like I'm sure there's plenty of people who maybe have not had business experience or whatever. I don't know what kind of money he comes from, but I'm sure there's been people who were given encouragement, advice, and learned later and became successful. This is, I think it's just kind of a sounds to me like a privileged kind of attitude. Like, oh, if you need it, encouragement, to me, whatever. I don't think there's a 100% on anything. To me, just blanket statements, I think, are BS.
Well, yeah. I kind of like the statement. And Chris, I've spoken to you now for a couple of years, and Saren as well. You both have a common denominator, which is you both have survival skills, and I think being an entrepreneur, you have to have survival skills. And you have to know how to leverage and use angles and so forth. And you both are good at that. And Matt, you're good at that as well. So I don't think everybody's built for it. And I think that's what he's saying. If you're not built, this is a game. This is not easy being an entrepreneur. And if you're not built for it, there's nothing wrong with staying corporate. I just think, he's just saying that not everybody's built for this game.
You're interpreting what he's saying, and you did a better job of saying you did a better job of saying that you need survival skills, and this is not for everyone. I agree with all of that, but what he said to me, it's just kind of, it, it's, a little bit extra. But
come on, haven't we all had people that like want to be entrepreneurs and come to you, and you just know in the back of your mind they're not built for this?
Is that because they need encouragement? You know, like even just like a word of support or whatever. Some people just, you know, we've been talking about community and relationships and stuff. And like, there's nothing in my whole life that I've done with any degree of success that hasn't leveraged relationships and connections and friendships and just people who like me and I like them back. And that it just mutually benefits us, even if it is just words of encouragement from someone that you look up to, whose words mean something or whatever that really lands, or someone that helps you see something in a slightly different way. Like, you know, to me, it's like a little bit gloaty, the way that he put that, right? Like, I don't need anything for anybody, but yeah, but you're a rich white guy. So, you know, maybe you didn't need as much encouragement as somebody else, but you know, is that necessarily a weakness that you needed a kind word?
But there's people that have left corporate and we all know them, and they feel they have the same corporate privileges in the entrepreneurial world. They still think like they have this phantom budget. They feel they have this support unit. Mm-hmm. They don't have to clean up the poop. They don't have to mop the floors because that's not the world they came from. And mm-hmm. those people, I'm like, you're not built for it.
Right. And they'll learn.
So can I jump in for I have two things to say. So I agree. So with the Elon Musk tape, I mean, I think Elon Musk is the arrogant white guy. And I think that statement reeks of white privilege. And the thing is that, you know, we all need social support, especially a black person in business. So let's talk about stereotype threat. And the fact that as a black person going into business, you probably are more concerned about failing than a white person is. So you probably do need more social support and more words of encouragement than a white person does. Secondly, he got words of encouragement. Mm-hmm. When his angel investor said yes to invest in him, that was a word of encouragement. So he can't say he didn't get any words of encouragement. So that's the other thing is that, you know, we talk about the fact that this isn't, you know, not everyone is built for this. I agree. You know, there's certain things about entrepreneurs, the risk taking, definitely you have to be a risk taker. But as an educator, as someone who teaches entrepreneurship, I firmly believe entrepreneurship can be taught. It's not always an innate quality. It can definitely be taught. So I wouldn't say that not everyone, you know, is built for entrepreneurship. I think they can be developed. And I've seen it happen.
I think that's such a great point, Sarah. And I think entrepreneurship can be taught and developed. And that's part of the reason why we're doing a show like today's episode, to show people what's possible. Well, sit tight. We need to take a quick sponsor break. And stay tuned for more Two Black Guys with Good Credit. We'll be right back.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Welcome back to Two Black Guys with Good Credit, the show for the financially curious and the financially knowledgeable. Today, we are discussing entrepreneurship. It's Black History Month. We have two of our favorite Black-owned businesses and their owners, Chris Sainsbury of CrossFit Dean Street in Brooklyn, New York, which is a gym, and Sarah Nurse of Kiki's Pet Spa and Boutique, also in Brooklyn, New York. Well, they are here to discuss and break down some of the challenges, successes, and lessons they've learned in business. So let's jump back into this. I have a question actually for both of you, but Chris, is there something that you've learned, like the old kind of, if you could tell your younger self, like what have you learned through your journey in business that maybe or what kind of lessons have you learned that maybe you didn't know when you started? Like, you know, I know you said keep your eye on the ball, and that's definitely something everyone needs to pay attention to. But is there anything like, oh, I didn't realize this or I didn't realize that?
Is there anything I could tell my younger self right now? Wow. No, a whole lot, and I just don't know where to start. I would honestly, I think I probably would have told myself, one, that it's okay. I think I battled with opening up my own business for about 7 years before, but just to realize I was always in business for myself from the beginning.
That's so deep.
So I would say to myself, shoot your shot. Like, don't allow yourself to, don't negotiate with yourself and don't talk yourself out of opportunities. Like I think, you know, there's, again, I think as a business owner, we all kind of flirt with make the lines of, is this the right decision? Regardless, we're going to make a decision, but is this the right decision for me, for my community, for my business? And there's only going to be one of two answers, you know? So I would say, like, you know, make a decision and go for it. If that's what you really want, stick to it. That's what I would tell myself, my younger self.
Saren, what about you? Any lesson that you've learned through your experience that maybe you didn't know when you started?
Yeah, so I think one major regret I have is that I put every single thing I have into my business. I did not diversify. So what that means, I sold two properties to put the funds into my business. I opened up my first store from funds I used from selling my first piece of property that I bought. I also bought a second property and I used funds from that to keep my business afloat. So I had a situation where I cashed out my 401k for my business. I put all my real estate, you know, investment into my business, and I was diversified. And I think that's a major issue. So if I had to do it over again, I would definitely make sure I was diversified. And I think, I mean, because, you know, I'm doing research right now on Black-owned business survival. And this seems to be a common thread among Black women, is that we tend to put, and this, you know, actually it's across the list of women I've spoken to, we tend to cash out every single thing that we have and put it into our businesses. I'm speaking to this one woman, she's 75 years old now. She was in business for 30 years. She has absolutely nothing left because she sold her property. She cashed in her retirement saving to keep her business afloat. So I think that's one thing I definitely would tell anybody at this point, especially women, because women, you know, as Black women, we have the lowest levels of wealth. And when we are starting off on the bottom and then we subtract it from that, it's not a good position at the end of it. So definitely make sure you're diversified.
Would you, in your opinion, do you think that phenomenon is a Black thing or a woman thing or equally both a Black woman thing?
So I think for Black women, there are a couple of things. So firstly, we're starting off with the lowest levels of wealth. So when you're starting off, you know, the average Black woman has zero wealth. So when you start off with zero wealth and you have something, and you're taking away from it, then you have even less wealth. Secondly, I think for Black women, we have this stigma consciousness of not wanting to look like a failure. Mm-hmm. So when our businesses are going down, it's going down, it's no longer viable, we're still sticking to it because we don't want to look as if we failed. So we're pouring everything behind it. When we probably should be exiting that situation, but we're not exiting.
So what would you have done instead then if you needed to bail out your own business and you had a property available to you but didn't want to cash it out? What would you have done differently?
So what I would have done, you know, differently from the beginning, is I would have leveraged the real estate from the beginning. I wouldn't have actually sold it. I would have tried, I would have gone to a bank and said, how can I use this collateral, but not actually cashed it out. I would have held on to something, put it into some sort of an investment where I could not touch it.
And now, how are you doing with, like, are you buying new property? Is it okay if I ask? Like, is your goal to get it back?
So my goal at this point, yeah, is like, it's to be more diversified. Mm-hmm. And what I can say also is that, I mean, I'm lucky in the sense that I've had family support and I've had people who've been able to help me. And I think had I not had that, I probably would be in a different place financially at this point. Mm-hmm. So I think I really am lucky in that respect. But I see so many women and Black women who, after all these years in business, have nothing to show for it. Because again, you know, we're believing that our asset is a business. Mm-hmm. A business is only an asset if you can actually sell it, and mm-hmm. someone else can actually see the value in it. If someone else is not going to buy it, it's really not an asset. Yeah,
so Chris, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question, Chris. I know a lot of young guys, they come to me and they have these great business plans. And when I look them over, by year one, they're making $100 million. By year two, they're making $20 million. When do you think realistically you would tell, like, the young people, like, when your business is really going to start making money? When, like, what's the reality of that, especially as a person of color business owner? When is a realistic time to say, you know what, you better put your business plan in, put it more, stretch it out to year X before you really start thinking about making money?
I would say one. Where's the part of the plan where you're planning to lose? I want to see that type of thinking when I'm looking at a business plan. Okay, because like no one expected COVID to come. You know, how are you going to pivot when it comes? You know,
right.
You know, if God forbid you had business partners and one of them quit, how are you going to actually be able to do X, Y, and Z? Or let's just say, what if people don't like your service? How do you move from there? So, I want to see more. It's not an A plan or a B plan or a C plan. No, it's the plan based off of, like, because it's always great to be ambitious. And ambition is one of the things. Ambition for me is a pro and a con. Because I would have probably been that 25-year-old that came to you with a business plan and said, you know, in the first, Sean, if you give me $10,000, I'm going to bring back a million. You know, but like at the end of the day, the reality of that is it's not always there. And like, I think if you don't plan for the failure and the exit plan, then you're not really in depth in your thinking.
Yeah, a lot of young people don't plan for the exit plan.
No, because it's going to work. You know, and that's exactly what they'll tell you. No, it's going to work. It's going to work. But with all honesty, like the reality of it, I was laughing a second ago. When I was thinking about my mother, and I was thinking about her, how she handled her business, and she's like 100%. There's no bank. If I can't save for it, if I can't pay for it, we're just not gonna have it. And my mother is like my business idol. And now I have arguments with her in terms of like leveraging her positions to have more. But it just, you know, that's just not her thinking. And so. Which is kind of cute, but like at the end of the day, like in reality, I literally just put myself on salary with my business for the first time ever.
How many years?
Congratulations!
And it's not that my
congratulations, bro. How long was it?
The gym has been open for 6 years.
Wow.
The gym has been open for 6 years. Five. We had a transitional shift. But I literally just put myself on salary. And so, you know, not to say there wasn't like, I always had a means of being able to take care of myself. But literally, I was had for the first 5 years of business, it was always me treating my gym like a baby and always investing my money. If I made a dollar from my other job, it went into my business. Like literally, and I'm not, I have stories to say, but like at the end of the day, I literally just put myself on a little something, and it almost depressed me, and it also made me damn proud, because at the end of the day, I don't necessarily have to show up to work. Like it becomes like there's a system in place.
Mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
So I have a question for both of you. What's the plan post-COVID? Like, are you planning to open new locations, like expand, keep things the same, even like, or downsize or whatever? Like, what is your, what's your post-COVID outlook looking like?
So I'm taking one day at a time. I'm trying to get through COVID, you know, because COVID has pretty much, you know, changed my whole business model.
Yeah.
So like I said, you know, like I've had a lot of stores, and I'm down to one store now. And my plan is to transition out of my business. And the plan has been to sell it to one of my employees. With COVID, that kind of changes things a bit. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, my whole model has kind of changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that post-COVID, you know, things can return to normal, some sort of normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
Because doggy daycare has been my primary category of revenues. Mm-hmm. But with people being at home, mm-hmm. and the people who are more likely to send their dog to doggy daycare, they're the ones who are able to work from home. So that pretty much has changed that whole business category completely. So I'm actually at the point of actually rebuilding and figuring out exactly what this business model is. And mm-hmm. so that's where I'm at right now, to kind of figure out, you know, and rebuilding somewhat different categories in the business.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully within the next 6 months, a year, things will stabilize and we'll figure out what's going on.
So my final question to you guys, since it's Black History Month, quick, do you feel like as Black business owners, you have that kinship, that support unit, the community support unit? I know a lot of the other communities have that like feeling of support. Do you feel like you're alone on an island, or you feel like there's a support unit for you in your business? Chris, I'll let you start.
I don't feel like I'm alone on the island, but I do... I don't really know how to explain this, but the margin of us are so small. It's like I can spot the Black business from, you know, from down. I can see you, my friend. You know, like I you know, it sounds corny, but like I, you know, and I make it my business. I am not always. It's very rarely reciprocated. But I do make it my business to go and do business with them. So now you have a new member. If you can see my dog curled up over there, that will be coming to see you soon, because I patronize.
That's awesome.
Great.
I patronize. Just because it's like there's this literally the margins of a minority-owned business, and being a woman, like, they're very few far in between. And these are just things that we have to, like, overcome.
Well, I was going to ask you, how can we do better? And I think you answered that. You answered that, you know, supporting one each other's businesses and making the effort to do so. And, Sarah, I'll ask you the same question. How do you feel about the kinship amongst Black-owned businesses, and, you know, what can be done to make it even better?
Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, we're so caught up in doing our own thing and trying to survive, you know, in our businesses, that sometimes we don't really reach out. And I think if there can be some sort of, maybe formal means of doing so, having some sort of a group of Black business owners, you know, because we do have, like, you know, the merchants associations and stuff like that. But to be able to actually have a group of people who are like you, who maybe going through the similar issues as you because of your race, you know, and the unique challenge that you face, and people who can understand that, I think it would be a good thing. You know, so you want to form a group, Chris?
it sounds like you just opened up your new business plan. That's what happened right now.
But no, I definitely feel, you know, that, you know, there are a few people in my neighborhood. There are very few of us left. And, you know, we try to talk as much as possible. But like I said, we're all so caught up in trying to survive that sometimes we just need to take that break and say, let's just meet up and talk. I think it's a good thing if we can do that.
Well, we thank you guys for sharing all this knowledge. How can our listeners who want to support your businesses or learn more about your businesses, how can they get a hold or follow you guys? Give us your social media handles. Tell us how to get at you. Chris, you go first.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Follow me on my website, www.deancrossfit.com. You can also follow me on Instagram at dean_crossfit. Love to hear from you. See us. Come by. Check it out. Let's sweat.
Tell me that Instagram one more time, Chris. Just the Instagram?
My Instagram is at dean_crossfit.
Got it. All right, Saren, how about you? How can people follow you, get a hold of you, take or just, you know, get to know more about your business?
So thanks, everyone. So you can reach me online on my website, kikispetspa.com is the best way to reach me. And then from there, there are links to my Instagram, to my Twitter, to everything that you need from there. Look forward to seeing you guys soon. Look forward to seeing you, Chris, soon.
Oh, no, I'm going to get your information from Sean. You'll see me. Literally, you'll see me before the end of this week.
Great.
we have a business love connection. we all need to do this. Let's all support these Black businesses. Let's everybody, you know, I think this is great. Great to see. So thank you, guys. And that brings this episode of Two Black Guys with Good Credit to a close. I'm Matt Smith, 1/3 of Two Black Guys with Good Credit. And like I always say, nothing changes if nothing changes. And this is a perfect example of how we can change our businesses and change the community by supporting each other. So that's my final word on it. And I'm out.
And I'm Karen Margolis, 1/3. But I feel like 1/5 today of Two Black Guys with Good Credit. You don't even have to have that good credit. And you can be just black on the inside, and you don't even have to be a guy. So it's explaining it to the newcomers. and as I always say, it doesn't matter what you did. It matters what you do next.
I'm Sean Linda, 1/5 of Two Black Guys with Good Credit. And, you know, it's about supporting your community and let every day and every month be Black History Month. And, you know, the only way we can do better is to help each other. And thank you guys for coming on the show. And I love what you guys do. And yeah, let's keep it going. Let's keep the movement going. And I'm out. Black guys.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.